Let's go ahead and stand together as we read verse 14. At verse 14, "Moreover, from the day that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year of the 22nd year of King Artaxerxes, for 12 years neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people, and they took them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants domineered the people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We did not buy any land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there was at my table 150 Jews and officials besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now that which was prepared for each day was one ox and six choice sheep, also birds were prepared for me, and 1 in 10 days all sorts of wine were furnished in abundance. Yet for all this I did not demand the governor's food allowance because the servitude was heavy on this people. Remember me, O my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people." You may be seated. I had no idea when I began my study in the book of Nehemiah how much I really loved this book. And what I love about the book of Nehemiah, it actually focuses on several different themes. There are several different themes that you can develop, different studies that you can get out of the book of Nehemiah that are very, very encouraging. The first study, of course, that you could get out of it is a study of revival. Because this is a book about people who were dead and who come to life once again, that they had lost all their vision and all their hope, and then this revival happens and the people come and they're inspired and they work together, and it's a tremendous study on genuine revival. Not a false revival, but a revival that really gets the people going in the right direction. It is also a tremendous study, as we have seen, on the study of warfare, of the opposition that arises in our lives, even as believers, the opposition that we face and the obstacles that there are to us walking in the fullness of life that Jesus has offered to us. And we've seen all these different strategies. We've seen the strategies of the enemy, those outside in the world, and the enemy or Satan and his strategies against us, the verbal harassments, the intimidation through ridicule. We discussed discouragement together, as these people did, the tactic of fear and of physical violence. And we saw how Nehemiah, with his tremendous leadership, he called the people to get ready, to be ready for battle, but they still continued to build. What a tremendous study. Then, of course, we saw the opposition that comes when there's struggles, not from outside, but within. And a few weeks ago, when we were in our study, we saw this tremendous struggle that had happened from insiders, the rich were taking advantage of the poor, and they were there was this division that happened within the people, and this beautiful scene of revival was being spoiled by selfishness. Which leads me to my third area that I see of a great study in Nehemiah, is a study of leadership. Because of all things, every leader ought to go through the book of Nehemiah and see that this is a leader's book. He shows and he demonstrates throughout this whole thing the beauty of seeing authority when it is in the right hands. When Nehemiah serves as an example, this model of leadership and the blessing when authority is used for its right purpose, when it's done the right way and when it's with the right motivation. We have been given great power and authority. And when a leader has that and uses it to bless others, that's what we see here in the book of Nehemiah. You see, another great threat to the kingdom and the building of the kingdom is not just opposition from the outside and the conflict that happens on the inside with those people, but it also happens in the leadership when there is abuse and the God-given authority by those who are called to oversee. This is actually very appropriate for our ordaining Michael today, because this deals with authority that we have been given. When authority and power is abused, the people under it suffer. And no doubt, as I would talk to a lot of you here in this room, there's a lot of you who have suffered under the hands of abusive authority. It might be as a child, as you look back, and you're relating to the experience you had with your parents. It might be as a wife under the hands of an abusive husband, or it might be an employee under an abusive employer. Or it might even be sometimes, or some of you here have been abused by your church that you have come from. Lord willing, not this one. But it might be that it's your history, something that you have gone through, the abuse of authority. What we find is that authority in the wrong hands can be a very scary thing. History just proved that out over and over again. And it seems that there are very few that really know how to handle power and authority. And yet that is the quest of the world, to gain more and more control over others. Sadly, often the agenda of the church is for those who want to get to the top so that they can have more control over the people under them. But Nehemiah, in this book, he serves as an example of leadership, an example of power and authority in the right hands. And he teaches about a leader who is compassionate, who is prayerful, one who is willing to wait and endure and persevere, and one who communicates and addresses problems. In fact, we saw this in our study a couple of weeks ago when Nehemiah was dealing with the selfishness of the people. We got this great observation on conflict resolution as we saw Nehemiah as a leader. First of all, he collected his own thoughts. He did his own consultation. I'm sure that was the time he got alone with God. And then he confronted these people in the wrong. He reasoned with them. He got them to think about what they were doing. He appealed to them on the basis of their testimony. He also told them about his testimony. And then he exhorted them to right what they had done wrong, and then he placed them under the judgment of God. What an example of a leader that is. How he didn't just brush this thing under the carpet, but he addressed it, and when he did, there was a tremendous healing that happened between the people. Now what we find here as we go on in verse 14 is that Nehemiah again talks about the example of his own leadership. In verse 14 he says, "Moreover, from the day that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, 12 years neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance." Now in this section, Nehemiah here gives his own testimony about his own leadership. This is kind of a parenthetical statement that he gives here. No doubt he wants to leave a testimony to these people so that later on they can look back and say, oh yes, that's the way that it should be done. That's the way that ought to be done. And he uses himself as an example of leadership to inspire the reader, and that he had lived and used his leadership on the knowledge that he too was under the authority of someone else, as every good leader would have to recognize. And it seems that Nehemiah was concerned about his own testimony before God and how he would use his God-given authority. And he begins with his credentials. Now, I want you to look at this. He was a man appointed with authority. He wasn't just self-appointed. He wasn't one who said, here I am, I've come to save the day. He was appointed in his rulership. He was appointed. He wasn't voted in by a board or a committee. He was appointed by the king himself. The king over the world empire, King Artaxerxes, had given him commission. He had the highest authority in the land. Tell him, Nehemiah, this is what I'm sending you to do. And it was the king's power and authority to appoint Nehemiah as a governor, as only those who can send with authority. And he had given Nehemiah all that he needed to govern. He gave him a title. He is now the governor. We talked about Michael having the title pastor. But here he is, he had this title that was given to him. He was the governor, that who rules others. And he gave him authority to govern. That is, by his own words and proclamations, the king made sure that Nehemiah had all the authority that he needed to govern others. Thirdly, he gave Nehemiah the power to rule. That is, he gave him all the reinforcements, the soldiers who would be with him to make sure that his authority was followed. Next thing we find is he gave Nehemiah the possessions that he needed to accomplish his rule. In other words, when you look at what Nehemiah is given by the king himself, Nehemiah was given everything the world craves, wasn't it? He was given position, that great title endorsed by the king himself. He was given authority to rule over others. He was given the power and the enforcement to rule over others. He was given possessions that he needed to rule over others. None of these things, as you see in themselves, are evil, but in the heart, in the wrong hands, with a wrong heart, they can do tremendous damage. The quest of the world. That's why money becomes such an enticement. Because money becomes a strategy for power to bring others under you. You know, people by nature, and I think hopefully you've learned this about yourself. If not, you will. Or your wife will point it out, or somebody will. But rebellion and self-government is just kind of in this. Independence. This whole issue of authority. I think of all things that believers ought to get a handle on is God's perspective on authority and His perspective on being submissive. I think we live in such a twisted world that we hardly understand authority. But you look at it, it's in our nature. We, by nature, we struggle against authority. There's something about when somebody says don't that makes us want to do. And when you look at your little children, they're playing together, what do you hear them saying most often? You're not my boss. I'm the boss. And you watch them begin to yell at each other and to tell each other. My kids argue all the time about who's really in charge here. Everybody wants to know who is really on top. But Nehemiah, he was given the world. And what is remarkable about Nehemiah is now that he's been given all these things that the world just so looks for and desires, what does he do with them? How does he use them? And what does he gain by them? You know, does he take his authority and use it for his selfish gain? Does he use it to get his piece of the pie, so to speak? You know, it is said that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And this has really been the seduction of a lot of great leaders who have allowed their leadership to go to their heads. A man by the name of Charles Colton, not Colson, back in 1780 said this. He said, power will intoxicate the best hearts as wine the strongest heads. No man is wise enough nor good enough to be trusted with unlimited power. Charles Colson, that right-hand man of Richard Nixon, said this. He said, power is like salt water. The more you drink, the thirstier you get. You know, few there are that can rightly handle authority and power when it comes to you. And there is no strongest test of a man's character than when you are given power and you're given authority. Nehemiah was given everything. He was given all these things. This is what I want to tell you here, that what we do is important. How we do it is even more important, but why we do it is the most important of all. Let me say that again. What we do is important. How we do it is even more important. But why we do it is even more, most important of all. Interesting thing here that every one of us as believers have been given power and authority. Have you recognized that? Of all the things that Jesus said to the disciples, he said, I'm giving you the power, I'm giving you the authority that I myself have. As born again believers, we have been given power and authority. And power always means privilege. When we've been given an authority, it means that we have been given tremendous responsibility. It means that we have been given something. These are jewels in the hands of God. These are jewels of heaven. All believers, to some degree, have been entrusted with jewels of heaven. That is, things that He has entrusted into our care to use for His purposes. And this is something that Jesus talked about when He talked about the talents. That those who faithfully use what are given to them will determine what they are given later on. When Jesus was talking about this, and those who were faithful, He said, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with a few things, but notice this. Because you were, I will put you in charge of many things. In other words, I'm going to make you boss. Because you've been faithful here. Enter into the joy of your master. In 2 Timothy 2:12, He said, if we endure, we will also reign with Him. If we deny Him, He will also deny us. It talks about the fact that there is this place where we use our authority or whatever it is that God gives us here, but how we use it will determine what we have there. But we are going to reign with Him. The reward of faithfully using what He's entrusted us grants us the privilege of reigning in Christ. In other words, faithfulness and authority and power here means greater privilege and authority there. This is awesome, and this is also very humbling, because all of us have been given a certain measure of authority. Either it's over your children, or it's over your somewhere in your church as a Sunday school teacher or as a pastor or whatever the case might be, there's a certain measure of authority, and how are we going to use it? Or what are we going to do with it? Authority is given as a privilege. Look at here at Nehemiah. First of all, he serves as an example in his leadership with his authority that he used his authority to identify with people. Though he was given tremendous authority over the people, notice that he stayed on the level of the people. He says, for 12 years, neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food, that allowance. For 12 years, he is talking here in overall span of this testimony of 12 years as a governor that he never did use that allowance of what he could have. And he'll explain why as we go through here. But he wasn't some bureaucrat who was far removed from the lives of the people that he claimed to serve. In other words, he stayed on their level. Neither did he allow his kinsmen who worked in authority under him to abuse their privilege. Listen, if there's anyone who could have taken advantage of the situation, it was Nehemiah. He'd been given everything that he possibly needed. He could abuse the people and he could have lived such a high life. He could have done everything that these people couldn't do. We find this in communist countries all the time. While the people are scraping for just enough bread for the day, those who are on top are living the high life and mansions with servants and living at all at the expense of those under him. Nehemiah said, "This is not what I would do. I refuse to do it." They could have eaten high on the hog while others starved. They could have lived in high luxury while those just squeaked by. But he didn't. He chose not to. This is really the beauty of the testimony of Jesus, isn't it? With all the authority that was given to him, being God himself, that he would choose to come here and be identified as one of us. This is why there was such conflict with Jesus. When it talks, and Paul talks about the Philippians passage, and Dave Hawking dealt with this last week a little bit, but where he says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or vain conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look for your own personal interests, but also for the interest of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not consider equality with God a thing to be grasped. But he emptied himself, and he took the form of a servant, being made in likeness of man." That's the testimony of Jesus. Although he had all the wealth and he came as God, he set it aside for the purpose of what he had come here to do. That's what Nehemiah shows us. Jesus always kept in the forefront that he had one purpose and one purpose alone that he had to accomplish. And that was to do his Father's business. This is Nehemiah. He had come to Jerusalem at the call of God to improve the lot of these people, not exploit them. And what you find in him is that he had the heart of a shepherd over the flock, who tends the flock and loves the flock, but not as a wolf who's there to feed off of the flock. You see, what I notice, and grievingly so, is that there are so many ministries that are set up simply to be served. In other words, instead of serving others, they exist to be served by others. You know, you've heard it on the radio, and the whole radio broadcast is about why you should send them money. That's the whole broadcast. And I'm wondering where the ministry is. Where's the giving? And somehow you miss the idea that what true ministry is giving out. It is not being there to receive. That is God's idea of what ministry truly is. And so when you see a ministry that simply exists to have others serve it, then there's a real twisting of what ministry really is about. Because the Bible says that greater are you, the lower you're going to become. You know, whatever authority has been entrusted to you, it isn't about building your own kingdom. Whatever resources God has given to you, it isn't about feathering your own nest. That is never why God blesses you. And praise God when He does. Nehemiah was a blessed man. You see, authority rightly used will identify with those that it has authority over. What God has entrusted to you, you need to use it to serve Him. What a contrast this is. Nehemiah focuses on that in verse 15. Look at this. He says, "But for the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people, and they took from their bread and wine, besides 40 shekels of silver, even their servants domineered the people. But I did not do so because of fear of God." He says, the former governors, this is the way they were. They abused their ruling privileges. They weighed down the people with heavy burdens so that they could eat better themselves. They use their authority for their own selfish gain. Listen, that's always when authority gets abusive is when you're using it for your own gain. They exercise authority in order to promote themselves at the expense of others. Authority and power were the means of living the high life for them. Abraham Lincoln said this. He said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." You know, even the servants, he says, even the servants of those who ruled the governors, they domineered the people. You know, monkey see, monkey do. They had the example of those over them. Oh, I see them getting the piece of pie, so it must be that Whatever authority I get a piece of the pie. NIV reads it like this. Their assistants also lorded it over other people, but out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Listen, little has changed since Nehemiah's day. Power still deludes and seduces men to selfish interest. The story of politicians who simply seek service because they want a piece of the pie. Or of a husband who rules over their wives and their children simply for selfish interest of what he's going to get out of it. Or churches who have done the same thing. You know, church history is filled with the horror stories of abuse of power. Abuse of authority. Abuse of what God has given to you. And the church gets wealthy under exploitation of people and abusing its power. And what a contrast it is to God's idea of leadership. I think of when Paul was speaking, or when Peter was sharing about the elders in 1 Peter chapter 5. He says this, he says, therefore I exhort elders among you as your fellow elder and witnesses of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily according to the will of God and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, not lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. This was the problem of the religious leaders of Jesus' time. It's why they had such a conflict with Jesus, because they lived so high above the people at the expense of the people that they were no benefit to the people. And they were removed from the needs of the people, and their abusive authority had paid a big toll on the people. That's why Jesus was such a threat to them. They dominated. They lived superior to the people at the expense of the people. Some years ago, I attended a convention that was here of a denomination here in Portland. And I went down, and I knew somebody who was attending the convention, so I went down to one of the main hotels where they were standing, where they were staying. And what I saw just blew my mind as all these pastors showed up, and I thought, what in the world is this? There was limousines and chauffeurs and all kinds of stuff, and big pompadours and the whole thing, and $5 million suits, and I'm thinking, what in the world is this? So what church are you pastoring? What's going on here? And I thought to myself, isn't that what really happens to you when you forget what you're called to? When you forget that this is, it's about service. This is about what I'm going to get out of it, what I'm going to put into it, but what I'm going to do to serve. And Nehemiah said, he said, not me. This isn't me. I'm not going to do it. Yeah, I could have these things and I could do these things, but I choose not to. And notice he gives the reason why here and the motivation. He says, I did not do it because of the fear of God. In other words, he feared the Lord. He understood that although he had been given this great authority, that he was under the authority of one who was greater than him. Though he was given this position of power and he had a purpose, he feared God. And he would give answer to God for the things that he had done. Proverbs 9:10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. It is interesting to note in Scripture how connected fearing the Lord is with the conduct and the motivations behind what we do. In other words, a person who fears the Lord knows that all things that you do are accountable to Him. You recognize that He is watching everything that you do. Our Christian experience is of no value whatsoever. Listen, hear this straight. It is of no value, regardless of what you believe, unless it leads you to a standard of conduct which is in violent opposition to the question actions of the world around you. It means nothing. What makes the difference in our lives is if we fear God. And if you have in your heart a fear of God and you are in authority, you will use your authority with great discretion. And Nehemiah had tremendous fear of God. A person I find who abuses authority, no matter who you are, is a person who has little or no fear of God. Because you don't recognize that He is going to hold you accountable to how you govern those under you. Listen, fathers, this is for you as you govern your children. Or husbands, as you govern your wives and your families. Or whatever the position might be that you're in, if you're an employer, or you're here as a church elder or a deacon, or whatever the case might be, God is going to hold you accountable. Do you fear the Lord for that? Are you using and doing what He wants you to do? I want you to see the next thing that Nehemiah does here is he says, I also, in verse 16, applied myself to work on this wall. We did not buy any land, and my servants were gathered there for work. See here that he used his authority to be an example to those who were under him. He applied himself to what he expected of others. He lived as an example. When I was a kid, we we would often be told, because I had some friends who had some rather interesting parents, but I remember their parents on don't smoke, as they would be puffing on a cigarette. And the whole thing that I remember about all that was, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And that was always a testimony that I remember so pronounced when I was growing up. You know, you just listen to what I say, don't worry about what I do. What Nehemiah here, and he says so boldly, is this: by the way he lives, is do as I do. Watch me and follow me. Do as I do. As you see me out here as an example, putting myself to work. Notice he worked on the wall himself. He didn't send out some team of lowlifes to do it. He worked with them, alongside of them. He was one of them with them. He was on the front line. This is beautiful. I think of my pastor, Pastor Chuck, and this is, of all the things that I love about Chuck is this, is that he has been such an example. Of all things, every time he gets together at a pastor's conference, he just shares things that's much more than what he says. It's the way I watch him when he's not preaching. The things I watch him doing, the attention he gives a little detail, him picking up garbage, he's not above it. He's not above it to go in and fix a toilet and do the things he has to do. And some people are amazed. Some of the guys said, I can't believe it. I showed up one day and there was a gutter that was all filled and people walking around it and the elders were kind of walking around it. And Chuck comes and takes off his coat and he had his suit on that day. And he rolled up his sleeve and he just reached down in the gutter and just pulled it all out. He was an example. How I appreciate that about him. He never too good to do the junk. And he practiced what he expected of others. What a tremendous sight this gives in our government, isn't it? Parents, the authority, or a Sunday school teacher, you see the example that is given here. Paul said this. He said, brethren, he said, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern you have in us. In other words, we show you how to live by the way that we live. Are we perfect? Never. This is humbling for me. I recognize, and I think it is for every other leader who is in this room, to some degree. We recognize that we are the models of what we want others to do. We recognize those things. In 2 Thessalonians, Paul wrote to the Thessalonians and said, for yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with labor and hardship, we kept working night and day so that we'd not be a burden to any of you. Not because we did not have the right to this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model to you so that you would follow our example. It means living in such a way that others can say, okay, I see how I can do this. I see how I ought to do this. Living as an example. The question is, are you using your authority to live as an example in a manner you can say to others, walk as I walk, do as I do? That's tremendously humbling, isn't it? When you look at the challenge that God has given to us with our authority. And everyone who worked under Nehemiah came to work. All those who saw him work and those who were under him worked. No one was too good. You know, in our church, we kind of have a joke because we have the ministry of changing light bulbs. And there's been times when staff members have struggled with that because it was like, you know, this is the lowest thing in the world you can do is to change a light bulb. But I'm convinced I don't want anybody on staff of me who feels too good to change a light bulb. Because it's something that we remember that we're here to serve and to give and to be a part of things. And it's just so tremendous to see God using us in service. In verse 17, he goes on here. He says, moreover, there were at my table 150 Jews and officials besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now that which was prepared for each day was one ox and six choice sheep, and birds were prepared for me, and 1 in 10 days all sorts of wine were furnished in abundance. Yet for all this I did not demand the governor's food allowance, because the servitude was heavy on his people. Here Nehemiah shows that he used his authority and his power to serve and to give. This is probably the most key point that I see in his whole leadership style. Instead of buying up land for himself, he used his resources as an investment to those he served. I love it. He was others-minded. He used his position to serve those under him. Can you imagine what dinner time was like? Over 150, he said, would eat at his table. Besides those who would come in from the outside. He would bring them in and he would give them the fatted calf. They would enjoy it well. They would eat well when they were with Nehemiah. He used the resources to bless others. Have you ever wondered why God has given you tremendous resources if He has? It's not for you to get high on the hog and live this life that is secluded. I don't think there's anything more pathetic in all the world to find a person of great wealth who's been given tremendous responsibility and blessing to see them using it all for themselves. How sad and tragic it is, a man who lives in a large house with multiple cars but goes home alone and shares it with no one. Not Nehemiah. True authority is always given to better serve and better give. One thing that I recognized when we had our first child is that I recognized who really the servant was. When you're getting up and you're changing diapers and you're feeding that child and you're doing all the running around and for all those years you're driving them places, you recognize that your authority as a parent, you're really the greatest servant. You're the one who's running around them. We understand that, don't we? We can see it. One of the things that I love about David Hawking last week, and I never thought of it in this light, but he said the essential character of God is that God is a servant. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I always understood it, but I never thought of God the Father being a servant. But if Jesus comes and He displays anything, He being the essential nature of the Father, He displays that God the Father is a servant. He serves. That's what He does with all authority. When Jesus came with all authority, He came not to serve, but to give, but to serve, and to give His life as a ransom for others. Matthew 23:11 says, "The greatest among you will be your servant, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted." If you want to be great in God's kingdom, learn to be a servant of all. You see, what you do is important, but how you do it is even more important. And why you do it is the most important of all. How you use your service. So in verse 19, Nehemiah prays, as he does so many times. He says, "Remember me, O my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people." I love what Nehemiah says. He says, "Lord, remember me." He's not here boasting about his good works and thinking of his brownie points. What he's thinking of is the fact that he has done so all these things with the motivation of pleasing God. Knowing and understanding that it was God who he was answerable to. How he used what was given to him, the authority and the power. The question was, would he exploit those who were living in distress? Would he use his power to overcome people and to exploit them? No, ultimately God would judge him, and he entrusted himself to God in all that he did. Listen, what you learn here is this: that God-given authority is not used to live above others, but with others. God-given authority is not used to say one thing and to lead in a way which you're unwilling to lead yourself. It can be used as an example and a model for those you desire to lead. God-given authority is not used to get others to serve you, but is used for you to serve others, to give to others. God-given authority understands that God is watching the whole thing. He rewards according to how we use what He's entrusted with us. I ask, Lord, give us that kind of heart in our authority. Lord, for the physicians, I realize this is convicting to all of us. Our resources, everything that we have, belong to Him. And what is He entrusted to you? Maybe He's given you a little bit of leadership. And I would venture to say that all of you at some place, at some point, have been given authority, an investment of things that God has given to you to use for His purpose and His glory. May you use it for His purpose. May God just inspire you. May He use you as a servant of all.